from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. Welcome back to the Better Lawns and Gardens, the second hour. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'm a horticulturist, landscape designer, garden author. I love to help people with their plants. We have a wonderful month coming up, lots of holidays, lots of great fun, and good gardening weather. This is the time of year that we get rain, and so you want to make sure in July that you're not overwatering. We get about 7 to 7.5 inches of rain during the month of July, and if we're going to get a tropical storm or a hurricane come through, we get even more. So you want to make sure that you are not overwatering. Check your rain gauge. If you got 2 to 3 inches of rain this week and your irrigation system went on, then your irrigation system does not have an automatic rain shutoff device on it, which is mandatory by state law, okay, since 1981, so nobody gets to grandfather out of it. And so your irrigation should shut down when you've got at least 1.5 inches of rain. And if not, then you need to check your sensor, make sure it's turned on. You can go to your box, it'll say if it's working or not, whether it's turned on. And it may need to have some, you know, kind of retrofit technical. It's a piece of equipment. You got to make sure it's working correctly. So we're going to come up with the dirty word of the day. Let's hear from John Denver. And the dirty word of the day is photoperiodism. Photoperiodism. The photoperiod defines the length of the light. For example, a summer day, the length of light could be 16 hours, while the dark portion is 8 hours. Whereas a winter day, the length could be 8 hours, and the dark period is 16 hours. Importantly, the seasons are different in the northern hemisphere than the southern hemisphere. Photoperiodism is the physiological reaction of organisms to the length of light or a dark period. It occurs in plants and animals. It could also be defined as the development response of plants to the length of light and dark periods. They're classified under three groups, and that is short day plants, long day plants, and day neutral plants. In 1920, W.W. Garner and H.A. Hallard published their discoveries on photoperiodism and felt it was the length of daylight that was critical. But it was later discovered that it wasn't daylight, but the length of the night that was the controlling factor. Photoperiodic flowering plants are classified as long day or short day plants, even though night is a critical factor. And that's because of the initial misunderstanding about daylight. Along with long day plants and short day plants, there are also plants that fall into a dual day length category. So photoperiodism in plants includes the growth of stems and roots during certain seasons and the loss of leaves. Artificial lighting can also be used to induce extra long days. Long day flowers or long day plants flower when the night length falls below their critical photoperiod. These plants typically flower during late spring or early summer as the days are getting longer. In the northern hemisphere, the longest day of the year just happened June 21st. After that day, days grow shorter until December 21st, which is the winter solstice. This situation is reversed in the southern hemisphere. Some long day plants are asters, hibiscus, coneflowers, lettuce, spinach, radishes, sugar beets, and potatoes. Short day plants flower when the night lengths exceed their critical photoperiod. Short day examples are chrysanthemum, rice, soybean, onions, violets, Christmas cactuses, and poinsettias. And so for that, the dirty word of the day is photoperiodism. And we'll be talking about them throughout the year, whether they need short days or long days. And that's the dirty word of the day.
Very interesting.
And so in your backyard newsletter for Better Lawns and Garden listeners, we'll be going out next week for July. It's free. There's no spam. And if you're new to Florida, beginning gardener or a master gardener, I think you're going to enjoy reading it. I let you know what to do in your yard each month. And I have a favorite plant of the month and my designer tips, which let you know what you can do with your landscape. I also have a column called Landscape Malpractice, how to know when to fire your landscaper. And then Lizzie updates you on her life in the garden and her turkeys and all the adventures she goes through. So you can go to Better Lawns and Gardens, and you can subscribe to the newsletter, or you can go to my website, she-consulting.com, or just Google Sustainable Horticultural Environments, She Consulting, or Better Lawns and Gardens, and you get the newsletter. So that's coming out this week, so I'm excited to have all of that happening there. And so, Lizzie, have you ever had a tree hit by lightning?
Yes, it's pretty scary, too. I know what to do with it.
And so you heard it and you checked it out. Well, how do you know if your tree gets hit by lightning? Coming up next is my favorite tree company, Word of Mouth Tree Services, Austin Tolman. He definitely knows trees, and he'll let us know about lightning strikes and what we can do about them. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. Joining me right now is Austin Tolman. He is the owner, co-owner of Word of Mouth Tree Services. And good morning, Austin. How are you today?
Teresa, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on your show.
You're welcome.
How are you?
I am great. I wanted to wish you a happy Father's Day. And we just kind of are very excited for you and Walker. And he's going to be a big brother, huh?
He is. So thank you very much. So our little boy Walker, he's going to be a big brother here in October. We're expecting our little girl named Lainey. So we're very excited, and we're a lot to look forward to. So right now it's, you know, one day at a time. We're learning something new every day.
Of course. Well, I'm excited for you. So you are a certified arborist for your family business, Word of Mouth. And for full disclosure, I just want to say I use your company for all of my tree work. And so I just, you have a great, great crew. I love how they do the work. And so starting this last week, we had National Lightning Safety Awareness, June 23rd through today. And as a certified arborist, how frequently, Austin, do you see signs of trees that have been struck by lightning?
You know, Teresa, so there's a lot of factors that go into it. You know, a lot of it depends on the location, you know, and where you're located. And, you know, also depends on the time of year. You know, spring, summer is typically when you're going to get a lot of your, you know, your more active storms. And, you know, generally speaking, there are thousands of trees that get struck by lightning a year. I mean, me alone, this past season last year, you know, I at least saw about 30 to 50 strikes, and that's only what I saw. And there were many, many more than that. But again, it depends on how active the storms are that season, you know, and again, where you're located. I mean, down here in Florida, we you know, tend to have very active storm season. So there does typically, there's a lot more strikes that do occur down here.
Of course, yeah. We have some cities here in Florida that are the lightning capitals of the country and the world.
Correct.
And so what are some signs that a tree has been hit by lightning?
Yeah, so you have your obvious lightning strike that, you know, you're not always going to see, but a lot of times you'll see that very distinct lightning strike that's going to go from the top of the tree all the way down to the bottom. And in some cases, you can even see the ground actually blown out. So you'll see chunks of grass missing, you know, things like that. You'll also notice bark missing. So if you don't always see that straight lightning strike that's going to go all the way from the top to the bottom of the tree, what can also happen is you'll notice things like almost like gunshot wounds, or you'll notice small pieces of bark around the tree. Or, you know, another really common sign of that you may have a lightning strike would be instant death. You know, when you notice a tree, even over a weekend period of time, has a sudden decline or a rapid decline of the canopy. So those are all just some telltale signs, very easy to tell, you know, that you might have a lightning strike.
What I find interesting about what you just said was that from the top of the tree down to the ground, and, you know, we have this kind of common misunderstanding that the lightning comes up through the tree and blows out, but it's really from the top down?
Correct. So the energy and lightning, it's looking for the ground. It needs to ground. So it's going to hit the top of the tree, and it's going to go to the closest ground, which is going to be the bottom. And you know, and a lot of times what you'll find, and again, when I go back to, you know, the soil and the grass literally being blown out around the tree, that's an easy way to tell. And you know, and I'm sure we'll get to this, but lightning protection systems is a way of pretty much, you know, manipulating the lightning to hit the tree and go straight down to the ground to avoid killing the tree or affecting
it. I definitely want to get into that. So are there certain species of trees that are more susceptible to lightning?
Sure. So generally speaking, trees that are in a higher altitude are going to be more susceptible to lightning strikes. Most common that I see down here in Florida is going to be your oak trees, like your laurel oak trees, your live oak trees, obviously your pines. Pines are a, you know, typically that's one that a lot of people are, you know, first going to come to mind, because you typically do see that, you know, straight, very distinct lightning strike from top to bottom of the tree. Your sweet gum trees are another big one. You know, on live oaks and laurel oaks, a lot of times you're not going to see that distinct lightning strike, but you're going to notice a lot of missing bark spots around the tree, and you're going to see it around the ground. That being said, again, I have seen very distinct lightning strikes on oaks, on sweet gums, but it's more prevalent with your pine trees. Most time with oaks, again, it's, you're going to see a lot of that small pieces of bark around the tree.
So does lightning always kill a tree?
Does not. So a lot of times it's all going to depend on how deep the penetration is and how hard it actually hits that tree. You know, from an arborist standpoint, of course, the first thing we're thinking about is safety. So I have a lot of trees that I'm still monitoring that were, say, on the back 40 have absolutely been struck by lightning. Pine trees, for example, had that distinct lightning strike, and I've been monitoring over the past, I have one that I've been monitoring over the past 2-3 years, and it's still doing very well. But in a lot of urban landscapes, you know, so close to homes and there's just a lot of potential targets, we typically can't take that risk. So, again, it's most of the time, you know, trees are not going to do very well with lightning, but it does not always kill the tree. And that's why I suggest to homeowners to always give that tree the fighting chance if you can, and consider
right.
the targets.
Right. And so what about palm trees? Can they be hit by lightning too?
Absolutely. So palms can definitely be struck by lightning. And again, you're not always going to see that lightning strike. Actually, pretty rare you're actually going to see the lightning strike on a palm. It's usually going to be, again, going back to a sudden death. Or you'll see, again, kind of almost like gunshot holes in the tree. Another easy way to tell on a palm tree is you'll notice at the bottom they're going to typically have a lot of rot, or, you know, in simple terms, basically what's going to happen is it's going to turn the inside of the palm into almost a mush material, and you'll typically see the top of the palm, you know, lay over, things like that. You know, those are easy way to tell that a palm's struck by lightning.
And so what can somebody do if they think that their tree or palm has been struck by lightning? Is there anything immediate they can do about it?
So, you know, first thing is, if you suspect a tree has been struck by lightning, you definitely want to stay away, because it still can actually still have a possible charge after the tree's been struck. The very next thing to do would definitely be to consult any local certified arborist that might be in your area, because that's going to be the quickest and best form of action on that tree, to see what we can do to save it, if it can be saved.
Okay. And so you mentioned a lightning rod. What are some ways that people can protect their trees?
So it's a pretty rare occasion that people actually go this route, and most of them, because it's a fairly expensive protection system, but it's been used on a lot of really older trees, like 100 plus year old live oaks, big protected trees like that.
And historic trees,
correct. And what they do is they install they're basically copper cables that get attached to the tree from the top to the bottom. And what that allows, the lightning strike to do is, again, hit the top of the tree, travel down the copper to the ground and deter the lightning away from the tree and go straight down to the ground, you know, to avoid the tree being, you know, damaged.
Okay, so if somebody, because we have the podcast that goes nationwide, basically all over the world. If somebody wants to find a certified arborist in their area, where can they find one?
So the easiest thing to do, other than, you know, hearing obviously word of mouth or referrals in your area, if you're really going into a blind, the best thing to do is to go on www.treesaregood.org/findanarborist, and that's a super simple way to find a lot of credible certified arborists in your area.
That, because it's important, you know, to find a certified arborist, because trees don't always need to come down. You want to save them as much as possible, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so Austin, what is your website? And give us some more information about your company.
Absolutely. So the easiest way to find us online is going to be www.wordofmouthtreeservice.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on today. I know you're going to have a great summer and a great fall. You're looking forward to a lot of great events this year. Thank you so much, Austin.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for having me, Teresa. It was a pleasure.
All right. Have a wonderful 4th of July. That's Austin Tolman, Word of Mouth Tree Service. They are a great company, but there's a lot of great certified tree companies in the area. You do want to go with an arborist when you think you have damage. And a lot of ways to keep the trees or your house safe is don't plant the trees so close to your house.
Yes. You know, and what's easy to do is that you can easily go, this is so cute, it's small, petite, and it's going to look really odd way out over here.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not. And so I do appreciate him coming on. I do appreciate that. So I had Gary, and he sent an email to me, and he has this beautiful area that he had to take down a plant that was really huge in a corner of his garage, and he has a sago palm there too as well. But he wanted to put a pot right in this area where the stump is, and he said, Teresa, what kind of plants can go here? And so, great photograph. I'm so glad he sent that, because that makes a difference on the size of the pot and the plants I suggested. And it's a large area. I think he could use 3 to 4 pots there. Mm-hmm. And the Laura Petalum will do well right there. And then also, too, firecrackers. So there's a lot of different plants that can go in that area.
Well, I absolutely love the fact that you had suggested bringing, like, having a big, and when you say pot, you think, oh, a pot. No, you have, like, a picture of a huge bowl. And I'm not talking about one that you would eat, like, a big bowl of cereal out of. I'm talking about, like, a potting bowl that
yes.
I've never really paid attention to, but I've seen them. But, yes, this is huge, and it would be perfect to fill that spot.
I think so. And he can put sedums in it. He can put different types of cactuses, even a little palm tree or multiple plants in it. So great question. Great photograph, Gary. I do appreciate you sending that.
Now, if somebody needs to send you a photograph, because of the fact that we cannot receive photographs through text, how can they send that to you, Teresa?
They can send it to me through our website, betterlawns.com. And then also they can send it through my website, www.she-consulting.com.
Yes, definitely.
And they can send that to us. And then on Facebook, they can post on Facebook too as well.
Yes.
Our Facebook page. So Carol in Tallahassee, she said she has a large sun hydrangea that accidentally got oversprayed with a house wash. The leaves are mostly dead now, and the blooms are really kind of speckled with brown. And so she should have washed it with fresh water, which is what she suggests. Do you think it'll come back? Yes. Yes, just keep watering it. The rainfall will help, and it should do just fine. And if you wanted to go ahead and take those leaves off, you could. And then wait until September, fertilize it, and it should be back to normal, Carol. Great text message, perfect text message. We're going to be back with more Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens and Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Well, Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and I have Don. And Don says he put out citrus trees over a year ago. They don't look like they're doing well due to torpedo grass that seems to be invading the fruit trees. Just cleaned out four bushes, and the roots have torpedo grass on the roots deep down into the soil. Is there a way to kill the torpedo grass without harming the citrus trees, which have not grown that much in over a year and all are turning yellow? Fertilized 2 to 3 times a year. And he said, thanks for any advice. Well, Don, we've really had a hard year. We had a hard spring with the heat and with the lack of rain, so we're going through that drought. So your citrus trees, I want to make sure that they're getting enough water. They need to have at least 1.5 to 2 inches a week when the temperatures are over 80 to 85 degrees. And we had that most of the springtime. So you want to make sure that they're getting enough water. And with the rainfall we're getting now, they're going to be fine. But torpedo grass is not something you can get rid of very easily. So this is just a warning. Before you plant any trees or shrubs, make sure that you've dug down in the hole that you're digging in and you've removed all of the weeds, including torpedo grass and Bermuda, before you plant any trees, because it will grow through. So torpedo grass can be eliminated by using either the glyphosate or the Fusilade, okay? And so it is a product that you can use. You can get it from the do-it-yourself stores, pest control companies. But you want to make sure that your trees are hydrated and that you're not touching anything that is green, that you're only spraying on the grass. And you can spot treat the torpedo grass to get rid of it. And so just make sure, you know, when we're looking at the orange groves during the summertime, we can see the whole aisles of weeds in between the groves. So it's not going to be the torpedo grass that is doing anything to the citrus trees, but it could be taking up water and it could be taking up any of the nutrition that you're using for the fertilization. So, you know, getting rid of that torpedo grass is very, very important. So thanks for your email, and let me know how you do. All right, Susan. Excuse me. Susan, she sent a great email. She said that she's tried to get rid of spider mites on her thriving elephant ear plant, and she said the instructions are confusing. She says she's seen blast of water. She's seen all of these do-it-yourself remedies. And they range from daily to weekly application. And then she also saw one post that said mites reproduce daily. So she's suspecting that her weekly applications aren't enough. Okay, so don't read instructions off of the internet. Okay, that's one of the big downfalls, is you see these instructions and they may not be accurate and you could really possibly hurt your plants. But what you want to do is, one, make sure that you're using the correct product. And so the spider mite, you want to make sure that any label that you use, don't use homemade recipes. That's going to be one of the biggest issues, is that you may not be doing it correctly with homemade recipes. So there is formulas that are on the market that are safe to use. And so, excuse me just a second here.
Yeah, definitely don't just do your own home remedies without double checking and looking at what ingredients you are putting down, because you could end up creating a horrible mess.
Yeah, Lizzie, thank you so much. I'm going to get through this without coughing. And so the products that I would recommend are Safer Spider Mite Control, Safer Neem Oil, BioAdvance 3-in-1, then also Bonide Captain Jack's Dead Bug Spray, or Captain Jack's Neem Oil, or Natria Neem Oil. And what you have to do, Susan, is spray the top of the leaves and the bottom and the base of the plant. So you want to make sure that you have complete control. Make sure your plants are hydrated before you use a product, and your elephant ear is hydrated and it'll be able to take it. And you might need to do a couple applications, but you don't need to spray daily for it. The other thing is, you want to make sure that it is spider mites. You know, I haven't seen it and I don't know if you've diagnosed it correctly, if it's just gnats, it could be from overwatering your plants, and then you can just get a fungal gnat product by Summit Responsible Solutions. They have wonderful gnat control product that you can use, and that'll take care of it. So spider mites, you're going to usually see the webbing, and you're going to be able to easily identify it. So one, make sure you've got the correct product for, you've identified the correct insect, and then follow instructions. Don't use homemade recipes unless you really know what you're doing and or the extension office says you can use it this way. So thank you for the text message. We're going to be right back. We still have time for your phone calls, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. We'd love to hear from you. We're going to catch up on all the text messages from last week that we didn't get to. And so if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. We still have time for your phone calls, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. And so I'd like to give a shout out right now to Michelle. She is a listener on the show, and she has a wonderful name, Michelle Ma Bell, and I just got the Beatles song ringing in my head. So I want to thank her for listening and being out there. So I appreciate that. So in Cocoa Beach, JAC, he's asking, radishes in pots, why do some seeds develop into only a sprout shaft and not a radish bulb? And the reason is a couple of things, JAC. So one is that the heat, temperatures over 80 degrees, radishes do not do well. And so this spring, if you put them in, it may have been a little too late. And so they're just going to definitely concentrate on flowering. They don't really develop into a bulb. The other thing is that it could also be excessive nitrogen. So if you're fertilizing and you're forcing it to put in more more energy into developing leaves versus then the actual bulb itself. And then also to the lack of water. And so a combination of all of those could have happened this spring, but radishes are cool season plants. So you plant them in the fall here in wintertime, and then they grow throughout the spring. And then by February, March, they're ready to be eaten and enjoyed. So great question. I hope that helps. And then also to Joy from Winter Spring says, does it harm a sago palm if you cut the cones off? No, it does not. They do not feel anything. And they also, they do just fine if you cut them off. And I suggest you do that. Let's go to Jerry in Citrus County. Good morning, Jerry. How can I help you?
Good morning, Teresa. I have a question on Seminole pumpkin.
Okay.
It gets young fruit on, you know, several inches in size.
Uh-huh.
And then it rots. It's sort of smelly, which indicates to me that probably a bacterial infection. But
okay,
I'm not sure. But is there any help for that type of thing?
So where is it growing? Do you have it in a container, raised beds, or in the ground?
Oh no, this thing grows all around the garden.
Right. Okay.
It's a big vine. You
uh-huh.
know, great big flowers.
Uh huh. And how often do you water it?
Oh. I don't know, every few days when it needs some. It doesn't wilt very easily.
No, it doesn't wilt. No, it doesn't need a lot of water, too. So whenever you're talking about, you know, excessive, you know, smells and things like that, it sounds like it's a fungal issue, a bacteria issue, whatever it is. But that just kind of indicates to me that there is a little bit too much water. And so if you get rainfall or what time of the day are you watering at?
Oh, I water early in the morning if I water.
Okay.
I don't water much because I get enough rain only when it wilts.
Okay.
That late day, you know, then the next day if it's still dry, I'll water a little.
Okay, you know, that sounds fine. You're watering at the
right time. I like that, you know.
Right. It seems like you're watering at the right time of the day. And so did you get any Seminole pumpkins?
No, not any that mature. They just turn brown. and rot away.
Okay.
And then it's smelly, sort of.
Right. And so do you fertilize?
No, not much.
Okay, you might want to try that.
That's good.
Yeah, so next time you plant them, you know, every 3 to 4 weeks, put down a little bit of fertilizer and give it some energy to produce quickly so that it's not taking a long time. So it's not taking a long time, and then it gets into that season where we get rain and it starts to rot out. Okay?
Oh, that's it. They're sensitive to the rain. They're not like the calabaza then that continues to fire off everything.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So it's a weakling of the summer squashes. Is there any other summer squashes that are resistant like calabaza?
We do have summer squash. Summer squash is really, really good in the summertime. And so I would just try it. And I think of Seminole pumpkins, planting them earlier in the springtime so that they're done by the end of June. Yeah. So I would plant them just a little bit earlier.
Okay.
Okay. What is your tomato question?
Tomato, I got some young, tender tomato. It's Angel Sweet, and it seems very tender. But something comes along after it grows about 6 inches or so high, the seedling, and cuts it right off about an inch above the ground, just as clean as a whistle.
And so in Citrus County, do you live in an urban area or out? Do you have a little bit of property?
Well, it's sort of halfway between type of thing. I'm the only one gardens here anymore.
Well, I'm just kind of wondering, it's probably some little critters, like some rabbits.
A little critter.
I'm thinking
like this one, because I have all the other tomato plants and they don't eat them. They just only want this one.
I don't know what's special about that one, but if it's getting right down to the ground where it's like an inch to 2 inches off the ground, that sounds to me like either a rodent or a rabbit.
Oh, a rodent or a rabbit too. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jerry. Thank you for listening. Call back anytime. That would be great. And so so let me go here to some more text messages. Let's see. Who is this? This is a Mark in St. Cloud. Got your pH meter. That's great. That's very important to have. You want to plant, make sure you're planting in the correct pH for your plant. So I'm glad you got the meter. That's wonderful. So then Alice in Melbourne, she says she's cut off dozens of buds on her hibiscus and she hates doing it. I don't know why you're doing it, though, Alice. And then you trim your roses a lot. I don't know why you would do that. You got to tell me a little bit more. She said the roses are leggy, and it just depends on the variety, the cultivar. Like Mr. Lincoln is a leggy rose, but your drift roses are not. So it would just depend on what type of rose you have, whether you have a hybrid tea or a floribunda. Whether or not you should, prune them often. She says, I have a small palm that grows slow and low. She wants to move it. She has sandy soil. Should she add black dirt to the soil? No, you don't need to do that. And so that you don't need to amend a single hole. And your palm tree will do just fine in sand. Let's go to Scott in Palm Bay. Good morning, Scott. How can I help you?
Good morning, Teresa. Thank you. I have a problem. I called a couple of weeks ago. I have Agastasia plants.
Yes.
And I had little white bugs on them. And when you go to squish them, they hop away. So I'm assuming they're white flies?
Yes, they could be white flies. Yes.
Okay. Well, I've been spraying every day for about 3 weeks. And, boy, they're still out there. In fact, there seems like there's more of them. Now, next to the Agastasia, I have mums. And now it seems like they're starting to infiltrate the mums. I got so mad at the Agastasia, I ended up pulling them out.
Okay. And did you still have the white flies around the mums when you pulled out the Agastasia?
Yeah, I just pulled the Agastasia out yesterday.
Okay.
And I was out this morning and looked, and yeah, there's those little white buggers. They're up and down some of the mums. Not too bad, but they're in there.
Okay. Okay, so is this in a full sun area?
Yes.
Okay, do you have good air circulation? Is there a fence around it? Is it quite open?
Good air circulation.
Huh. So it seems like you've got a good infestation going on, and so you pulled them out. The mums, I would not spray the mums. I'm kind of hesitant to spray the mums, but you might want to try a systemic, okay? And like Bayer 3-in-1 systemic, and that's going to help the plant stave off the insect issues without having to spray them, okay? And so I don't know why you have them. I'd like to kind of see the area. If you want to send pictures to the Facebook page, you can do that. Load them on the Facebook page and I can see them. Give me a little bit more idea of why you have them. But I don't like the idea of spraying it every day. So, you know, sometimes we cause more problems when we use more insecticides or more often than what the label says. So, you know, there should be no reason for you to spray every day. So, you know, I don't,
as a last resort, I spray. In fact, what I'm thinking possibly is the 7 that I've been using.
Yes.
I've had it in my hot garage for a while.
Oh.
I'm thinking maybe it lost its potency.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I'm glad you said that. Yeah, the potency of it. If you've had it for over a year, 2 years in a hot shed, then it's not going to be effective. That's okay, a very good point.
One quick question before I let you go, Miss. I have some azaleas, and they're still blooming really nice, and I know it's late to trim them. If I trim them now, I mean, we're at the end of June, am I going to harm them?
No.
So
why do you want to trim them?
Well, they're kind of gangly, and you know, they need to be trimmed back some, but I thought azaleas needed to be trimmed once a year to keep them tight.
Right, after they bloom. So as soon as they finish blooming, you can go ahead and cut them.
Oh, okay. I thought June was like the cutoff for them.
Well,
but
if they're blooming, so what kind of azaleas are they? Are they the ones that bloom multiple times a year, the encore?
No, it's been blooming for about five. They bloom about 6 months, believe it or not.
Now, wonderful.
They're beautiful, but I'm thinking, please stop blooming so I can trim you back.
but I don't know why you want to trim them back. Are they getting really wide and everything?
Yeah, they've got shoots that are 2 and 3 foot above the
you
main
can cut those. You can cut those any time of the year. Okay, Scott? All right. Thank you so much for calling. We're coming up on the end of the show. Appreciate you calling. It's lots of great questions today. I love that. And
yes.
Thank you for everyone for being patient. I was sick last week. And I made it through the show.
You did very good. That was very impressive there.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. I want to thank all of our interviews today. Bill Stengel is wonderful. And their product, Mosquito Bits and Dunks and Year-Round Oil Spray, is a great product. So check that out for mosquitoes. This is Mosquito Control Awareness Week. And, you know, you don't need to have mosquitoes in your yard. So check out Mosquito Bits and Dunks, and that's this Summit Responsible Solutions. Also to Stephen Biggs, I loved having him on. Blackberries for your chain link fence, Austin Tolman, word of mouth, and thank you to everyone who called in and all the text messages. Thank you, Lizzie. You've been great.
Yes, and happy 4th to everybody. We'll be on hiatus next weekend, but the weekend after that, we will have Tom McCubbin in.
Tom McCubbin in the house. There you go. Thank you so much. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.